This is Edge Cases. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Wolf French.
And what's our topic this week, Wolf?
Keychain.
Keychain. Okay. Just the keychain in general or something?
Just the keychain in general, kind of history and the pros and cons of it.
Cool.
Yeah.
I wonder what that will be like. Okay. Well, I won't have long to find out. So I don't think, do you have any feedback?
Not at the ready. Do you?
Not at the ready. Yeah. I do not either.
Okay. Then we can jump right into it. So
We have gotten some emails from some folks. Yes.
Yes, we have gotten email, but we're not really prepared to address them yet.
Yeah, and again, I would say again to people, if you're gonna send us email with a lot of very interesting little points, I again encourage people to write blog posts and send us a link to them, because that way all we need to do is say, oh yeah, go talk to this guy. I think it's a better way to convey that sort of information rather than just sending it to us.
Okay.
And I've said that before, so
yeah. Do people still blog?
Some people.
Okay. So I know that you are, I like to say that you're kind of new to the Mac scene, since you were not with us with the 128Ks, but
yeah, but, such a newbie.
But you were like, you really started on the Mac circa like 10.0, 10.1, right?
No, I was programming on the Mac before then. I was programming on the Mac in the 10. Well, I not professionally, but I was programming on the Mac in the OS 8.
Okay.
OS 9 days.
Okay. So then, do you remember PowerTalk?
Ooh, no. I just remember it as a name. I never used any APIs related to it.
Yeah, yeah. So PowerTalk was is one of these things that it was one of these grand, ambitious Apple APIs. I think it was in the Mac OS 8 days. And they might have been talking about like bolting on to System 7 with system extensions or something like that. But it was this thing where it's like, oh, we're going to unify messaging into the operating system. And we're going to let you talk to internet email and deck mail and CompuServe and all these different mail systems. And we're all this integrated into you. And it was this big hullabaloo type thing. And it's very, very Apple mid-90s, very kind of a signature effort type thing. And it didn't really
go.
Yeah,
they did a lot of really badly thought through things like that, I think, back then.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, you know, the thing to do at the time type thing. I mean, it was a kind of a Microsofty type thing. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh, we have all these things we want to tie together, and what, you know, we've done the operating system, so what can we do for you now? And like, oh, we can take all these things that are separate and kind of unify them together for you. And yeah, it was very much like the kind of the mid-90s things to do. And so they called it PowerTalk. And I actually was quite excited by PowerTalk, the idea of having kind of an inbox built into like the Finder, which I think was one of the things they showed off. And it ended up shipping all that, but I think it was just pretty much a complete failure. But interestingly enough, the thing that kind of like came out of it was the concept of the keychain, the idea of I actually, you know, it's funny because I actually read the Wikipedia page for the keychain before I started here, and I didn't know it actually came out of this. It's basically the surviving part of PowerTalk that lives on today in even in your iPhone.
yep.
Yeah. But so it was the idea of that the operating system would have your list of passwords for you and keep it encrypted and kind of hand out access to applications that you authorize and that type of stuff. So it was basically a good idea. So that's the only part of PowerTalk that survives. And yeah. so underneath keychain is, apparently keychain has something to do, and this is all very foggy to me. I kind of did some research from it, but again, kind of my bad attitude kicked in that I didn't really want to learn the stuff, so I didn't go too deep. But there's this thing.
Do you want me to take over? You want me to do some research?
Yeah. Could you take over the show for me? Because there's apparently Intel has this thing called the Common Data Security Architecture that. I know Intel is involved somehow, but it's apparently like led by the open group. I think Intel invented it, then gave it to the open group or something like that. But like I said, it's all
Intel is just, you know, Intel boy.
we need to do an episode on Intel one of these days.
no, we don't.
But anyway, it's definitely owned by open group now, and I don't even know why Intel would care about this type of stuff unless it like had some like firmware benefits or something. But anyway, maybe
their job is to when people aren't coming up with enough cool things to do with their technology, they have to do it themselves.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. But we don't want to turn this into an Intel episode.
Right, sorry. Sorry.
I mean, Intel is actually a really interesting topic. We definitely could do a show on Intel. But
okay.
But yeah, so there's, I mean, users can tell by the name, the Common Data Security Architecture, or CDSA is where it's at. You know it's just going to be pain right there. That's because CDSA is used everywhere, and just from the name, like the name feels like, you know, 90s bloatware type stuff too. But anyway, the current keychain on the Mac is actually has something to do, again, like I said, I can't really care about this stuff, so it has something to do with CDSA underneath the hood. And specifically, there's the services are accessed via the Common Security Services Manager, or the CSSM, which is, again, something I could care less about. But the important thing is it provides five categories of service: data storage, cryptography, trust policy, certificate management, and authorization computation. I think I know what three of those are. Like, trust policy, what does that mean? It's like, that seems overly generic to actually know what that means. And then authorization computation? Like, anyway. So, I'm a big curmudgeon about this, but it seems way overly architected. But the important thing, the take-home point here, is that the idea is that of those five categories that this gave you, that is designed that you can layer services on top of that. And keychain services is what Mac and iPhone programmers use. And I'll talk about the iPhone, the iOS caveats coming up. But this is keychain services is such a service. It is a layer on top of CDSA or CSSM or something, one of the two, or both, or they had some sort of ugly baby. I don't know. But the important thing is that our friend of the show, Graham Lee, wrote a book called Professional Cocoa Application Security, which I'll put a link to. And this is why I was willing to learn anything about this at all. He has a chapter in there about the keychain, and it's a good book overall, and I recommend reading it if you're interested in Cocoa application security, which I think pretty much everyone should be. And so it was very painless to learn this stuff. I mean, he actually can write like a human being, so that's very highly recommended. And so in general, I want to both praise and condemn keychain. I know a lot of our episodes we just condemn, but keychain actually has some good.
Oh, we don't always just condemn.
We try to. You know, we're the fair and balanced podcast of tech, right? Okay. So the first thing is that, you know, the entire thing where it's like PowerTalk being a failed kind of effort, but keychain kind of shaking out of it. And so the keychain was introduced in macOS 8.6. So it's been around before the macOS 10 days. But a lot of us, like, I never used keychain, I don't think, before macOS 10. But that was because, you know, with macOS 10's multi-user architecture, it was more kind of necessary type stuff. And also, Safari uses keychain for installing internet passwords and stuff like that. So the web browsers that I used also didn't support it. So it's like, you know, I never even had a if I was there, I don't think I ever used it at all. But on Mac OS X, we all do. We kind of have to. And so from an architecture standpoint, I like how keychain has the multiple keychain files. That I think is a pretty good idea. I like how there's kind of the search path where you can have them. You can have multiple keychains open at once, and then an application can ask for a keychain. It can ask for a password, and it will search a keychain in the order you specify, and it will pretty much do what do you remember the resource forks? How you could open up multiple resource files? And you could then ask for a resource, and it would also do the kind of search type thing.
Traverse them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like that type of thing. And also, I guess, probably the modern equivalent would be just like the in your path variable in Unix shell, how you have, if you like do echo $path all in uppercase, it will list out your current path environmental variable, which basically is a colon delimited list of paths to search for when you type in foo. It will search for those paths for that binary. And so you can, if you want to use, like if the system supplied, like for example, macOS 10 currently comes with an old Ruby, but if you want to use a newer Ruby, you can juggle the paths and you can install your own Ruby and put it earlier in the paths variable so that it will come up first. And you can do similar tricks to keychains. That's the way it works. Not that I do, but it what I do is have with the and do is actually quite relevant to keychain in general, but that's for the con section later.
I was going to make a joke.
I sorry.
Glad you got to it first.
Yeah, sorry, cut off your own joke there. But for each project, because we have these nowadays we have code signing, right? And those have certificates and public keys and private keys and stuff like that. And often those will actually be project specific. And I actually have a keychain for multiple projects that I will have open that for code signing purposes that I check into version control and stuff like that. That's a little bit risky in terms of checking your keychain into version control, but the keychains do have a password by default. But I've actually had this use a really weak password. I tell everyone the password. But if you already have access to source code, I'm already trusting you a heck of a lot. So that's what I like about the keychain architecture is that I can have project A, project B, project C, and I can put those keychains that are in the Git repository folder, let's say on my hard drive, I can put those in the keychain search path, and then when Xcode actually wants to go and sign the thing, it can find them pretty easily. So I think that's pretty good architecture. I like that the keychain has the auto-locking ability so that when if you don't use a keychain for a while, it will automatically lock itself so that you'll need a password then to unlock it. And in general, I mean, this is a good way to add extra security yet keep things very convenient that you can keep those keychains in your search list. And it's interesting because I think it's somehow, even if the keychain is locked, when anything asks for any password, it won't say, oh my god, this keychain is locked, will you please unlock it for me and prompt you for a password. It's only when it's looking for that specific password and it wants and it knows it's in that keychain, will then prompt you. So that's pretty good design. So that it doesn't tend to get what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does that mean that the keys are always visible even if it's locked?
Yeah, I just was thinking about that. Hang on, let me see this.
I bet that's true. I mean, it's you're right that it makes it much easier because if you had five keychains, you wouldn't want to relay and lock each of them, even though they didn't have the key.
Right. So I can look at a lock keychain's contents, but obviously, if I go to look at its contents or extract that password, then it will prompt me for the password for the keychain itself, the keychain file.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Interesting thing though is a downside to that is AgileBits, the company behind 1Password, had 1Password used to use Apple's keychain for storing its own passwords, and they had an interesting little blog posting about this, which I'll provide a link to, and they provided a bunch of reasons why they would use the keychain, and they kind of mentioned that it's obviously shipped on every Mac and it's robust and well tested, which I'll take issue with later. But one of the problems they had with it was that the keychain's automatic lock function is based on the usage of the keychain itself, not on user activity. So you can be happily typing away on your computer all day, every day, and for hours on end, but it will you haven't used this key in 5 minutes, I'm going to lock it up for you, even though you are actively working on something. And so you can see why Apple did it, why they did it the way they did. But this was often it's undesirable user interface that they want to get away from. And they had a bunch of other reasons. That wasn't the key reason, but that was one of them. And so the keychain also has, and this is really interesting in terms of how the keychain advanced with codes alongside code signing, that it, so you have, so keychain stores application passwords. And the problem is that, let's say I launch NetNewsWire and some of my RSS feeds needs a password. And so I supply the password and store it away in keychain. And then NetNewsWire gets updated. And so there's two eras. There's before code signing and there's after code signing. So BCS and after code signing ACS. I won't actually put acronym there. That's stupid. But before code signing, somehow the applications were identified. I'm not exactly sure how they're identified. In the current era with code signing, every application obviously is actually not every application, but the code signing applications are cryptographically identifiable. And so they're signed by Apple and or the developer with developer ID. But in the olden days, before code signing, and also apps that aren't signed, they're somehow identified. And I'm not exactly sure about how they go about doing that. And this type of mechanism also existed back in the Mac OS 9 days, so it's not specific to Mac OS 10. But I'm thinking it's something has to do with like maybe the application's modification date, and maybe, I don't know, the checksum of the first 4K of it or something. But somehow they were able to, if I got a new update of NetNewsWire, and it would still ask me for my password before the code signing days, because it would say, oh, this is a different app. And so, you know, and it's with every NetNewsWire update, I would have to, you know, say, yes, I authorize this application to access this, these keychain items. And with code signing, once you are code signing your app, then it can say, okay, this application is different than what it was, but I see the cryptographic key used for it is the same as the previous one, and so I'm not going, and so this is okay. The user has already authenticated, said basically that this vendor for the, and this vendor plus this application, this unique combo, it has already been authorized by the user.
And yeah, so, yeah. The code signing actually existed on OS 10 before the app stores came out. And it was kind of a struggle for people to realize why you'd want to do that. And I believe one of the reasons what they mentioned for OS X, obviously before mentioning anything about any kind of an app store, was that you could then use keys from your keychain with new versions of the application without being prompted for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And also the code signing also kind of goes deeper than that. It's also used for like application identity for like the firewall type stuff. So if you launch an app that wants to listen on a port, you I don't think that's on by default, but I turn that on and it says, hey, do you want to let this app listen to this port? I say yes. And then with code signing, if you get a newer version of that app, it just won't even prompt you. Let's let the app go ahead. Okay. So that, final pro here. is that it's open source, so you can look inside how keychain is implemented. Unfortunately, it kind of is a morass because of this CDSA. I don't know what to call it, like technology standard, whatever it is. I guess it has like architecture in the name, whatever that means. But it's obviously there's a big white paper or manual out there. That explains in detail, like the architecture, probably like the specification for what CDSA is and why it's designed the way it is. But let's look at the source code for it. It's like there's a ton of code there, and you kind of walk through it to try and figure out how things work. And it's not this thing, you can't just dive in, look for something quick, and get out. Although I will say that I actually did have success with it. It took me about an hour, I think, a few years ago. Keychain services wasn't working the way I thought it should. And so I was able to actually crack open the code. And actually, now that I think about it, it wasn't that bad. I guess it was, like I said, it took about an hour to pinpoint the place where I thought that should work in one way. And I kind of proved to myself that it wasn't working the way it should. And I think there was even a nice comment right there saying, this isn't supported yet type stuff. So take it as is. So now for the nays. I've already given some background here that, man, with the CDSA and the CSSM, it just seems really overly complicated. And I think it's really telling. So the Mac version still has CDSA under the covers and apparently has some – I think all the CSSM APIs are there. So if you want to code it in some sort of Unix standard fashion or something and still access like keychain stuff, apparently you can. I don't know if anyone does that. I think you're out of your mind if you do. But and unfortunately, it's quite complicated. And what's really interesting is that iOS doesn't have CDSA at all. So it's basically from the ground up re-implementation. And the only thing that they've kind of filled out is this highest level API. And there is none of this CDSA legacy stuff that they brought to the iPhone. Instead, it's just all geared towards the very simple API that they provide. So it's, in my opinion, like if you had to learn the Mac thing, the Mac side of how to implement keychain type stuff, I would actually start on iOS and look at that API to get your head around it, because that API actually makes, it's still, in my opinion, a poor API, but it's makes a lot more sense. It's a lot easier to get something working with it.
Was it still a C API?
It is.
Yeah, that kind of kills me.
Yeah, I was going to mention that later, but we can mention now. So, so Will Shipley has this term about APIs, quote unquote, frozen in carbonite, which is the idea that these carbon-based APIs kind of being old and broken, and why do we have these carbon APIs when we're programming Objective-C? And you can totally understand it, like in the olden days when, you know, when Mac developers weren't on board with Objective-C and were just going to keep programming our Mac apps and C++ type stuff. There was obviously a lot of pushback there.
Yeah.
But
was what, 10 years ago, right?
Right. Objective-C has won. I mean, back when Apple said that the high toolbox won't ever go 64-bit. I mean, that was a line in the sand. So, and
there's also, I think there was a something in WWDC, maybe this year, maybe last year, where they talked about how Objective-C is climbing in the ranks of some survey.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like, you know, 100th anymore. It's right now like 7th or 5th or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's actually, you know, making a big dent in even real world language usage.
Yeah, definitely. And like to this day, Apple is rolling out APIs that don't use like the Objective-C and that's our core foundation-y kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and we talked about this before. I can understand the old APIs and wanting to, you know, why rewrite everything just to give them the nice object sheen, but the new APIs I don't understand to this day.
Well, I talked with somebody about this once, and I guess C and C++ are used a lot at the lower levels of Apple's APIs. So Apple's code, you know, components at the lower levels. And so if you have an API that you want to be able to use at these lower levels beneath the Objective-C level, you either write it in C or you can't use it at these lower levels. And I think I've actually might have heard this from more than one person, you know, and of course never going to be an official thing, but that's what I've heard. So that's why they do it. And then I guess they say, well, this was important enough to write in a lower level, but not important enough to then also get an Objective-C layer on top of that, because that would be an extra work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I can tell you.
Yeah, but unfortunately, that means that everyone writes their own Objective-C wrapper.
Oh, yeah. Or everyone uses like the one wrapper that somebody writes and puts up on GitHub, which is, you know, possibly then never updated in 5 years.
Right. And yeah, it's you know, Apple backs itself into its own corner there, that, you know, it wants us to use only their APIs, and, you know, and why do you even need third party code? We give you everything you need, but they don't. They won't give us like the I hesitate to even call them convenience wrappers, because they end up being just pretty much essential to reduce the amount of code in your app. You don't want this core foundation bridging type code sprinkled throughout your entire app. It makes sense to kind of focus it into one area, and then you can just use Objective-C objects everywhere else.
And especially with Arc, it just makes it a lot harder to use the core APIs.
Yeah,
the way you used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So speaking of like in the GitHub projects, I actually want to point out a couple of them. There's a Extend Mac has EM Keychain, which is an older Objective-C wrapper for the keychain that makes it easier to use and Objective-C-ish. And then something I spotted recently is called FX Keychain, which has an interesting, more dictionary-based API, I'll talk about kind of the need for a dictionary-based API a little bit later. But another problem with Keychain is that sync comes and goes. So Keychain, when it first came out, had no sync capabilities. And so the Keychain was local to your Mac, and that was pretty much end of story. I believe it was in the Mobile Me era that Apple introduced Keychain syncing, which I've heard great things about. I've never used it personally, but it's, I mean, MobileMe gets a lot of flack for the things it did not do. But from what I can, what I've heard, the keychain syncing actually worked pretty well in terms of saving your username and passwords and being able to use, you know, so you log into a site on your first Mac and then at your work Mac, and then you go home. And with keychain syncing installed, you bring up the same website and it will know the username and password for that one type stuff. And so that supposedly worked pretty well, but of course, Apple being Apple and its internet strategies and lack thereof, they killed MobileMe.
Yep.
And so then, I actually, that was I think, one of the biggest pain points that people were complaining about was that keychain syncing, which worked, then went away, and then they had no real replacement story. I guess the replacement story was just to jump to things like 1Password, which is probably a good
idea. Which is not a replacement story, is. As far as Apple technologies are concerned, right?
Yeah, but in general, it's when anything that has to do with Apple, like and his internet strategies, I would recommend not putting your eggs in Apple's baskets, because they've shown time and time again that you. I mean, didn't they like end up deleting like everyone's .Mac page, like with photos and stuff like that too?
Like, yeah, at some point, I think. Yeah.
Okay. So, but now keychain syncing is supposedly back in
it's
iCloud.
It's back.
It's supposedly back in iCloud. And that was one of the features that they're introducing in iOS 7 and macOS 10.9. I will not use the M word. And unfortunately, it is limited to them, so it's not like a backwards compatible story. So it's basically Apple saying, "Oh, we have this. We're resurrecting this old feature, but now you have to make sure that you're totally up to date with the very latest of what we have in order
to
have
to
this
upgrade.
Feature." Back. Yes, you have to upgrade, right? And so again, I would advise not trusting Apple here and not using their iCloud keychain syncing. But it does seem like people are using iCloud for things against my advice. So.
Everyone doesn't listen to you, Wolf?
I this is why I started the podcast, so people could better understand my advice and then follow it to the letter. And it's not
we'll
having
have to repeat it more often.
That's right, at louder decibels, right?
Yes.
And then another thing about Keychain that is not so great is that there's a menu command in the Keychain menu called Keychain First Aid. And this menu item kind of belies the problem of Keychain's architecture. Like, I don't know what type of data format the CDSA stuff uses under the hood or whatever, but it seems prone to corruption. And Keychain would fairly reliably eat itself or corrupt itself. Especially, things seem to have gotten better, I would say, around maybe 10.6, but Keychain would often and just end up developing problems for seemingly no good reason. And I haven't had many problems last few years, so maybe Apple finally tracked down the corruption bug or something. I don't know, or maybe they switched data formats or something like that. But in general, I'm always suspicious of any app that has like recover my corrupted data files
seriously
in the menu and my big the one I usually paint for this is actually FileMaker Pro that has the recover corrupted FileMaker Pro database file right in the file menu, which strikes me as a good indicator that perhaps their lowest level data format is not all that robust.
File destroyer instead of FileMaker.
There you go. So one of the problems that I mentioned is that so FX Keychain has this kind of dictionary kind of thing. It's Keychain in general, and I think it's because of like maybe because of CDSA architecture, or maybe it's because of the PowerTalk heritage or something. It's simultaneously over-engineered and yet not suited for modern use. So it's like you get the worst of both worlds, and that you look at the API for Keychain, especially if you start with the Mac side. Obviously, the iOS side is it's a lot more sane, but still way over-engineered, and it's irrelevant. A common use right now in modern apps is that you need to store an OAuth token. And, man, they have, like, constants for like every single possible internet protocol ever, you know, going back to RFC 822. But you know, it hasn't been updated, and there's no standard way to store an OAuth token in the keychain, even though you don't really store passwords anymore. You get the Twitter account, you use OAuth to get that token, that's what you end up storing. And the problem is that the token is not just like, it's not just simply a password. It actually contains at least two parts. And so it's pretty much up to the developer how you're going to encode that and where you're going to put it. And even though there's all these specialized fields for internet passwords and for generic passwords and all this, it doesn't fit the use. And I have similar gripes about Address Book. And it has all these specialized fields. And I think they end up adding Twitter just in 10.7 or something like that. So I could have all these contacts, but if I actually wanted to store a person's Twitter handle, I would have to put it in the notes field because there was no place to actually put it. So it's one of these things where it's overly specific, but it's not suitable for the task at hand. So what I end up doing, and it's interesting that it looks like FX Keychain took a similar route, is you do use the password field to store things like OAuth tokens. And what I do is I actually use an ASCII plist to store that information. So that way so if the user does end up like, you know, wanting to see that password, at least it looks like it's structured data. It looks like FX Keychain actually stores it in a binary plist, which I don't know if I actually prefer my idea a little bit better. The FX Keychain did have a version of it that actually supported arbitrary objects, but that ended up being a security hole. I don't know if you followed the big Ruby and Rails and YAML exploit that they had.
I did not.
Yeah, it's basically the same issue that you could have with these binary plist type stuff. And it's the idea that, the basic exploit is that Ruby's YAML implementation, at least the one that was being used by Rails, would allow you to serialize arbitrary objects in and out. And one of the things that you could do then is that you could give a YAML file to a Rails server with a malicious object, and it would happily deserialize it and execute it. And so you could have a similar problem with a binary plist, that it could use NSCoder to serialize arbitrary objects, and then if you could then potentially use that to you could potentially store a quote unquote password in the keychain, and then use that as exploit against another app. It looks like the current version, it only uses straight plist objects, so that's their workaround. But if you use straight plist objects, then binary plist at that point is only an optimization, and I would just use my technique, which is the ASCII plist.
Sure.
And another problem with Keychain is that it has, and this was one of the biggest pain points in the original iOS SDK. It has bit people again and again. It's a lot better now, but it has there are different Keychain APIs between OS X and iOS, and specifically you could write Keychain code that would work on the simulator, because all the Studly, like CDSA APIs were there. And when you actually would run it on the device itself, then it would fail because the APIs weren't there at all. And now if you're using the sec item API, the highest level API on iOS, they actually brought that to the Mac. And it's the same API. Same API in both. So this is, I think you even get compiler errors nowadays. So it's much less of an issue than it used to be. And in my view, I would love to see Apple deprecating the old APIs on the CDSA ones. They're, like I said, they're overly complicated. They do a lot, and maybe apps need them, but iOS seems to be getting away without having it whatsoever. And another thing about the keychain, excuse me, is that we're kind of in a different era now. We have application sandboxing, and we have full disk encryption. So I still think there's a need for keychain, but the idea of having this like encrypted file, and kind of controlling access between different applications. I don't know if it actually fits what the operating system, what macOS 10 actually offers today. It seems to me as redundant with the type of security we have. So it's not a fully formed thought, but I think it might just be overlapping now with kind of the native abilities now that macOS 10 has gotten more secure. So in terms of I have some design suggestions that I would really like to see keychain go. And in general, I think that keychain access is for people who know what keychain is and what it's doing. It's actually a pretty nice piece of software. It's pretty buggy in terms of like not updating correctly, and I get crashes a good amount of time. I just know that whenever I tend to like quit between each operation that I do on keychain because it's that type of bugginess. But in general, it's like it has a pretty good user interface in terms of how it's laid out, and it's pretty and how you access the different facets of information. But I would love to see keychain access being kind of like the heavier duty app, instead having kind of more of a like a password management app or account management app. So kind of a instead of kind of being keychain focused, be more application or service accounts focused. So a list of your applications there, and then when you click an application, all the passwords they can access, or a list of services, your Twitters, your Facebooks, and all that. And when you click on it, then it lists all the applications there. So it'd be more focused on the applications or the accounts rather than the keychain itself. Because like I said, keychain is basically implementation detail. What's interesting is that Apple is kind of going that way, but not with keychain per se. That in the system preferences has this terribly, terribly, terribly named pref pane called Mail, Contacts, and Calendars. And if you open that, it's actually a list of services, and you can add services there, and accounts for services. And I would love to see that kind of extended to kind of embrace the idea that that could also be a list of your passwords or something. And there's also a similar kind of interface, and again, in system preferences, in the security and privacy pref pane, in the privacy tab, is also a list of kind of like these are the list of kind of services like contacts and geolocation and those type of potentially sensitive services. You click on one of those, and then it gives you a list of apps that are allowed to use it. I guess notification center is similar too. So the idea that you have this kind of this functionality, and then a list of applications that are allowed to partake. So I guess in that way, it's a whitelist. I would love to see Apple kind of taking it that way instead of this with keychain. Have you ever used the secure notes feature of keychain?
I think I thought about it once.
You think you thought about it?
Well, I've used secure notes in 1Password. Mm-hmm. So I guess if that didn't exist, I might have thought about using it in keychain. But no, I never used it.
I don't use 1Password. I use a competitor called a Password Wallet, and I use that has secure notes in it, but that's tied to individual passwords, and I use that extensively. But but a secure note on its own, I don't think I've ever had need for that. But that's kind of when most of the time when you are dealing with keychain access, you don't really care about the certificate side of things, and it's also kind of rare to even care about the public private keys. Probably as developers, we care most about certificates and public private keys because of the App Store issues, but that's actually comparatively rare when I'm actually dealing primarily with passwords. That's why I would love to see if – I'm not saying retire keychain access because it provides kind of like the direct metaphor for the idea of having multiple keychain files and that they're open and locked and all that. But more of a purpose task-focused app that would – that be more focused on passwords. And the other problem is that in the kind of the meta issue here is that passwords are horrible. It's like
title.
There you go. So either as developers who run services or whatever, it's like either we create them and then the users forget them, or we let the users create them, and the users create very guessable passwords or weak passwords, or they or they reuse it across different services. So it's like there's there doesn't seem to be like passwords in general seem to be a pretty problematic concept. I mean, they've had a good run. I mean, obviously with PowerTalk, and the passwords go way before that. But I mean, Apple owns the whole stack, and I would love to see them like use this power that they have to kind of push forward and kind of maybe do something like RSA Secure IDs, which is known as a two-factor authentication system, where I think you've seen these, Andrew, right? These little tokens that you hold. It looks like kind of a really cheap calculator without any buttons. It's like an LED display.
Yep. Yeah.
And the idea is that you look at this thing, and like every 5 minutes, it spits out a different number, right? It's a pretty long number.
Yes.
And then, so the idea is that this is actually, I don't know exactly how it works, but it's my impression that it seems to be, it has some sort of seed, and it's running some sort of like a random number generator off it. So it's probably hashing some state there. And every 5 minutes, it creates a new number. And then in order to log into a service, you provide your username and password like you normally do, but then you also have to enter your RSA ID, or I guess your secure ID. And the idea is that so that even if someone is able to figure out your username and password or crack it, they still need that number that changes once every 5 minutes. And so and like kind of the obvious like synchronization issues and like the SKU issues, I haven't seen those be a problem in practically, because you think that the cheap little quartz crystal timer in there would skew pretty badly over the course of a few years. But they built some slop into there so that it doesn't seem to be an issue. And
the biggest issue is that you lose the little device.
Right. And that's why I would love to see something like that kind of built in the iPhone, right? You're less likely probably to lose your iPhone.
Yeah, I guess.
You don't sound very enthusiastic about this idea.
No, I mean, but of course you do lose your iPhone.
Sure.
And then it's gone.
Right.
So, yeah.
I mean, obviously you have to take into account that everyone's going to lose everything eventually. So you take different steps, like, you know, are you going to lose your Mac at the same time? And could it be running similar software? And it turns out that RSA does have an app on the App Store called RSA Secure ID. So you don't have to carry that little token with you. You actually can just use your iPhone for it. Seems pretty basic, but it's there. But I would love to see Apple, and actually, this is not even an Apple thing. I would just like to see like us getting past passwords, and like this, the banking systems, and it's all very it seems very tenuous, and it's like we kind of need to grow up and actually kind of move forward here. And it seems like everyone's going to be carrying us. If they're not already carrying a smartphone, they are going to be soon. And so they're all interconnected. And don't get me wrong, there's a new world of security hurt there for cracking these things. And I'm sure there's great new exploits to be discovered. But, man, passwords are just so over. We need to get past them.
Passwords are passé.
Okay, there you go. Sure, that won't be the title?
Yeah, because you just said a new world of security hurt, and I really like that one.
Okay.
Well, we'll see.
That's it?
That's it for you. Let's see if I can remember the things that I was thinking of during that. Nope. Okay, we're good.
New shorter format.
Yeah, right.
Nope.
Let's see. Now, you talked about, about the password, about the keychain. It strikes me that the kind of fields that are in there do seem to be a little outdated. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, they're not really set up to handle newer formats. But I think they were kind of set up before the internet, even, or before we were kind of sure that this was mostly going to be used for internet passwords.
Right.
And I also, so I think that, and there's just a mismatch. Like I think they could write something newer than the keychain that would be more suited to what you actually use stuff for these days, which again is mostly username and passwords for websites and for services. And I think the keychain is definitely showing its age because it's not very well built for that now. And I don't think it can be, adjusted to that. I think it can be updated to that. I think you would probably want to do something new, mm-hmm. Which would then get rid of a lot of this baggage. And I also think that, however, that a lot of developers might not think this is a problem. Like, you wanted to do something that was instead of the keychain's old interface. The trouble is, I think most of Apple's developers on a day-to-day basis, if they're using the keychain for anything, they're using it for App Store development, which is an entirely different thing than what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So as far as they're concerned, it works fine now because it works well for that. Whereas you really want, two apps or two different, panes in a keychain app UI, because they are very different things to do. You really don't want mere mortals dealing with, different keychain files and all that. Yeah, you're exactly right that, they've been trying to deal with this sort of complexity and take it out of the picture for the iPhone for a long time and for the Mac App Store for a long time. And really, the keychain is just so legacy-based that, it feels like something that Apple hasn't gotten around to making a new version of. Mm-hmm. And I think if they don't ever make a new version of it, it's just because they never did get around to that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they're ever going to say, well, okay, here's a half update to the keychain that gets you a few extra new features. Mm-hmm. Actually, they might do something which gives you a few extra new features, and that will just be, tacking stuff on because they need it. Mm-hmm. They will never give you like a full rewrite of the keychain, which is still the keychain. I think they would give you something new. Is my thinking there about that? Because it's just so old,
right? Mm. Power talk, man.
Yeah. let me see. Was there anything else? I think that'll be it for now.
Okay.
All right. So please visit our website, edgecasesshow.com, all one word, for show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. And we'll see you next time.